Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Bernard Langer beat Vijay Singh, beat him by a couple of shots. And then we got to watch Steve Sands interview Bernard Langer.
Oh, how about that?
So it's
that?
Great to see Sands on TV.
She's a reed.
You know, that was nice.
And that was Langer's ninth major title on the senior tour.
Senior major stop. You know, stop.
Okay. Well, I mean, just Gary Player was upset because he doesn't feel like he got credit for three wins that he had.
What do you think, Michael? Senior major.
Senior majors are tough. They change names all the time. And
nothing called the KitchenAid anything should be a major.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, and in the first day in a long time, it appears to be bright and sunny in Washington, D.C. in the morning. We are plausibly live from Chatter. We have a nice breakfast crowd here already. Very happy.
Thank you for coming out this morning,
to see everybody. We give everybody gifts, and they give us money. That's how it works. It's Chatter, though the sign says Chad's. I can't stand that. We're on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, about a block inside the District of Columbia line. Gary Braun is here. Gene McManus is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. Later in the show, we will have Tim Kirchin and we will have Howard Feynman. I received this in the mail. Dear Dr. Porthauser, my name is Leah Wagner. The adults in my house, who I'm related to by birth, are longtime listeners, Joe and Deb Wagner. We would personally like to invite you to my sixth grade graduation on the 31st of May, which is today, is it not? At that Penn is. Elementary in North Liberty, Iowa.
Ooh,
I am previously engaged.
It's going to be a tough make.
I am previously engaged, but much congratulations on that thing. Gary pointed something out to me today from, what is the comic strip?
The comic strip is the very famous Family Circus, which created by Bill Keane, I think has since passed, and his son Jeff is now.
And what does it have
Penner.
Today?
It's one of those, what do you call it?
A single frame.
Like an oval.
And it's and everyone knows Family Circus, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of, I think, it's loosely based on Bill Keane's life. But it's a little boy standing in front of a mirror saying, "Mommy, I think you put my T-shirt on backwards." And in the mirror, you see in reverse on his T-shirt the words, very clearly, La Cheeserie.
It's got to be a shout-out.
Well, I can't.
So we're very grateful.
Definitely a shout-out.
Very grateful. We should ask if we could to get like a small little copy of that, and we could put it in a frame, and we could put it here.
That would be great.
Although,
I'm guessing you just asked.
Yeah, aren't we supposed to get cork boards and things to put stuff up? I mean, we've been here for a month, and nothing is up. We have no sign. We have no presence that we're here. What are we doing?
Let me just, in an effort to just calm you a little bit, let me just wish you a happy Cove Fief.
Yeah, what in God's name is that? What else did we get
if
here?
If you're calling people out, why don't you use names?
Name names.
It seems that your rant about the cork board and the sign, that this is directed towards a group of
Peter
people.
Peter and Jeff.
No, just put it on the table.
Peter, Jeff, I love you.
No.
Where's my sign?
Peter and Jeff,
where are my cork boards?
No, here's a rule of management that you need to know. Praise in public, criticize in private. All
just
right?
Would like a sign.
Okay.
He's not a manager.
Michael's
an owner.
Michael did that. Michael's responsible.
Well, no, you've
been
hinting at this for weeks. Apparently the sign is lost in Baltimore.
Great. Road trip.
Let's go find it.
That's great. Mr. Tony, Dr. Tony, I'm writing this on the Metro. I apologize for the handwriting. I hope it gets to you before I combust and burst into flames. I'm on my way to visit Chatter for the first time since your purchase. I'm so excited. The Chadwick's Bowie Monger was the epicenter of my childhood and teens and early 20s. I've been listening to you for well over a decade, first against my will and now eagerly. I've lived in the Netherlands for almost 5 years, the past 2.5 apart from my 5-year-old daughter who lives in D.C. with her dad. Your show transports me not just back to my childhood, but also to the day-to-day of my daughter's childhood. When I Skype with her, I love to say, I hear it's pouring rain, or I hear the construction on Connecticut Avenue is terrible. In all seriousness, your show helps me stay close. It's also helpful to listen to your guests like Steve Sands and Will Bond and David Aldridge, etc., whose work requires them to be apart at times from loved ones. Their passion for work and family is inspiring. Thank you, Glennon McGregor in The Hague. Isn't that nice? That's very, very nice.
Very nice.
I delayed starting with Bryce Harper just to cool down a little bit. I'm just so angry at what Joe Torre has done in punishing Bryce Harper and Hunter Strickland. Not that Bryce Harper should not be punished, because you can't charge the mound. I get that part. But if you give him 4 games, for reacting to an act of brazen and crazy rogue aggression on the part of a pitcher who has carried a personal grudge for 3 years, a pitcher acting on his own, obviously not without Bruce Bochy or anybody else on the Giants.
And a pitcher who is a tomato can.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So you give Bryce Harper four full, and you give a middling relief pitcher six games, which means at most three innings. Then you have effectively punished Bryce Harper for reacting to this act of aggression more than you punish the guy who creates the circumstance. You understand any of that? Joe, what are you doing? Because Joe Torre had Derek Jeter for 15 years, and Jeter. Derek Jeter behaved in a certain way that is not like Bryce Harper, that Joe Torre has decided everybody should behave like Derek Jeter. And that's crazy. This has to go to the commissioner. If Rob Manfred's alive, he has to look at this and wonder what Joe Torre has done here, or am I wrong?
I agree with you completely. And I think I would agree even if I weren't a Nats fan and even if I weren't a Bryce Harper fan. To me, I mean, it just seems like Harper had to do what he had to do. Now, you can go old school like Boz did in his column today and
say, don't do it.
Rise above it.
Yeah.
But in the same way that maybe Joe Torre feels compelled to send a message that you can't charge the mound.
And you can't, you shouldn't.
Bryce Harper has to send a message that you can't throw a 98-mile-per-hour fastball at my hip, big guy.
Yeah. No, I mean.
And, well, it's not fully adjudicated yet, so Bryce Harper has
appealed. There's an appeal
process. But the messages to me are conflicting because on one level they are sending a loud message that you cannot – we don't want these fights.
Okay.
But, so they've punished the fight, and they seem to have punished the fight, to your point, basically equally. They have not punished
the intent
or the instigation or the ridiculous tantrum that people have seemed to have forgotten that Strickland threw, you know, that's worth a couple extra games just in what it, the way it required he be sort of carried off the field like a sack of potatoes.
He should get five times the punishment that Bryce Harper got.
For pouting for 3 years. So he should get penalized.
And I get, you know, this, every time this happens, with there's a discussion about the relative time missed for these appearances. So six, you could effectively say these are the same because Strickland will miss up to four appearances in six games, maybe.
It's not the same.
Harper's going to miss four. But yeah, I agree with you. That was very surprising. I don't think I'm just saying that as a Nats fan.
It's
I think anyone objectively.
Here's
would think
Joe ridiculous. Madden quoted as saying, "I don't blame Bryce Harper whatsoever." You know, I mean,
let me just clarify this, and I think you feel the same way. I have no issue with a 4-game suspension for Bryce Harper.
It's fine.
I mean, Michael and I talked about this yesterday, and we thought it was probably a 5-game suspension. But I would have figured Strickland was 10 minimum.
That's not Bryce Harper's not going to charge the mound. If the pitcher doesn't do this with two outs,
100%
and nobody
of the blame
wants
on him.
A deliberate strike at the guy's hip at 97 miles an hour, not at his head, not Manny Machado, a deliberate strike at his hip at 97 miles an hour. I don't understand the relatively equal punishment here.
That is the freedom of being a middle relief pitcher who is less well known than Harper. Harper has to play by different rules. I agree with you that I'm surprised that the visuals of this are so equal on paper, but I also accept that Harper, as the face of baseball right now, particularly going into the summer with Trout
out 6 to 8 weeks.
Harper is the face of baseball, and already in the last week I have stories of Harper basically saying, hey, no participation trophies, and you have that visual that's going to live on. Whether you think he's throwing at the pitcher or off to the side, that is now the lasting image of Harper that finally takes away his being choked by Pap.
Okay, so
let's obviously like this though, because they punished them equally for fighting. Ostensibly, they didn't really punish Strickland for throwing at him. So they're saying not fight, but they're not saying don't throw at him.
Right. This is 100%
right.
And
here's another side effect of this: Harper was 0-for-5 last night
with 3 strikeouts.
With 3 strikeouts, struck out with the bases full. Okay.
Now they won the game anyway.
Are you going to say this is his Cubs 5-walk situation?
Well, but I'm his wondering. Presence allows Gio to, you know, hit in a run in the first inning. So I do think that even if he was retreating to the fold, the rest of the team, if you watch those opening innings, both benches are clinging to the rails, ready to go. So even if he sits down, you know, you look at the rest of the team, they look like they stepped up for him.
You don't want Gio throwing at anybody on the Giants.
No.
You don't want that because that escalates.
Especially Buster Posey.
It escalates to a terrible. Well, he wouldn't throw at Posey because
conscientious
Posey
objector.
Posey let Harper run out there. But Michael, we were talking off the air. There is an appeals process here. This is not like the NBA where they issue the suspensions immediately before the next game. The suspensions here were issued, but there's an appeals process. Michael, you think he should just serve it right away?
They've already won the series. I'd have him take it tonight, and I'd have it carry over into Oakland, where they're playing one of the worst teams in baseball.
Right.
Beyond that, they have the Dodgers, who are one of the hottest teams in baseball. I want him back for that. In fact, I would have Bryce go down to Los Angeles early and do the late-night circuit and celebrate
nice.
This persona.
That's a great
and really
call.
Build
yeah.
up that... Really build up that Dodgers series because the Dodgers fans are actually going to embrace Harper for this.
Yeah, the Dodgers are good.
Wear some sort of T-shirt that trolls Strickland when you go on the TV shows, too, if you're going to do that.
Do we think, because Bryce Harper has been, since the moment he arrived in the major leagues and flipped his helmet off on the first extra base hit.
And stole home.
He has, yes, yeah. He has been perceived as a complete hot dog and a vanity license plate. Do we think that this changes that? Is he looked upon in a better way because he did... what I think in baseball circles would be, I think would be the right thing by going out there and protecting himself.
I would contend this would only fuel the fire of his being the most liked and most hated player in baseball. I think those that are predisposed to dislike him will only use this to further dislike him, and those that like him will see this as a positive.
Although, since he started, he has numbers. I mean, now, even if you're a hater, you have to look at him and go...
Last year was bad, but the year before was great, and right. this
well,
is a great
people
year.
Hate Tom Brady. They don't...
Yeah,
you know,
that's
I mean,
true.
They don't diss his numbers. I mean, his numbers are there. I mean, I wonder if 5-8 years from now, if there's
when
people
with the
who
Yankees.
Will be haters. Yeah,
no, when he's playing center field.
When he's won three championships with the Yankees.
Yeah. I, you know, my sense of him is that Rob Manfred, the commissioner, ought to speak to this. I mean, I don't know how – I've not watched a single person on television who's commenting on baseball who has said anything other than it does not seem to be an equitable punishment for both people. It seems that the Giants have won this. And I don't know if the Giants are collectively, because of the actions of their one pitcher, they are 100% responsible for this. 100%. So why this inequity in punishment? Why should they have won this punishment? Why?
I don't know. Doesn't seem fair to me either.
Well, I would say they won this until last night's swing game. I think by the Nats taking the series, they're able to take that win back away from the Giants.
Bothers me.
Yeah, but this is like a hockey fight. This is like Tom Wilson getting in a fight with Sidney Crosby, and you say, okay, I'll take that trade.
Right.
Sure, sure, mm-hmm.
right.
You know. Sure. Are more people? What's going to happen next? Are people going to think, well, he's a hothead when he gets back in? We'll throw at him again. We'll see if he charges the mound again. Because he won't charge the mound again. But what will happen is your best player will get drilled.
Yes.
And so this is sets a bad precedent.
If Harper hadn't charged the mound, could the ump have thrown out Strickland there and then on the spot?
Sure.
I don't think he would have, but he could have. Sure. I don't
I
think
mean,
he
FP,
if that
if
looked
you hear-
deliberate enough. That he could have done that?
When FP says history, if you've seen the clip of that, if you were watching... Well, you were watching that live. FP says history as soon as he said, I don't think he means because we're about to watch it. I think he means Strickland's out of here.
Yeah.
Because he knew that
that Harper had hit him for two home runs.
Right.
And if you go back, and then they showed both those home runs, and Strickland is just fuming on the mound. And Harper, to be fair, Harper... Cadillacs it.
That's
in the playoffs.
It's a playoff series. You're allowed to do that. You're losing at that point.
The umpire may not know all that history, but he knows in a 2-0, 3-0 game, whatever it was, with no count and two outs in that situation, you know, you plunk a guy on his butt cheek.
Yeah. All right. I was going to use some of the opening segment as well to talk about what the general manager of the Washington Capitals said about trading or not trading people or extending or not extending contracts. And I realized that
definition.
If Brian McClellan walked into this restaurant with a shirt that said, I'm Brian McClellan, nobody would know who he was. So I'm
not wasting time.
And
that concludes our hockey
Although
segment.
He would get a great breakfast and really good service.
He would at Chatter. Okay, so we will come back. Tim Kirchin, when we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. Does anybody use Harry's out there as I turn to the... Oh, my God.
Yeah,
there's
a couple hands going up.
That's pretty good.
Look at that.
Father's Day just around the corner. Dads are impossible to shop for unless you get them something from Harry's. They have a special offer you're going to love. Dad will, too. You get $5 off one of their shave sets, including a limited edition Father's Day set at harrys.com. Tony K. Everybody out there who uses this knows that it is close, comfortable shave. and that Harry's is about a great shave at a fair price with five German-crafted blades, flex hinge, lubricating strip, 100% quality guarantee, full refund if you're not happy, $2 a blade or less, which is half the price of the leading five-blade razor brand. Shave sets start at just $15, not to mention $5 off if you go to harrys.com/TonyK. You get a razor handle, moisturizing shave gel, and three of Harry's five-blade precision-engineered razors. All these numbers, I didn't know there'd be math in this. Harry's limited edition Father's Day shave set comes with a storm gray razor handle, differing than the blue one, which we've seen before, the orange one, which I have.
Fits the DC weather.
Yes, a chrome razor stand, foaming shave gel, three replacement blades, and a travel cover. Plus, it comes in a sleek, and here's a word I'd never seen before, giftable. I guess that's a word.
Able to be gifted.
Yeah, I guess that's a word. I'd never seen it before. Giftable. That's better than
like your vast fortune is giftable.
Yeah, but not to anyone related to me until the restaurant goes down the drain. Go to harrys.com/TonyK right now to redeem a special offer for fans of this high-quality podcast. Harry's will give you $5 off one of their shave sets. It's a limited time only. Act now. That is harrys.com/TonyK to get $5 off and help support this particular show.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Let the Music Play. It's performed by Leanna McGuire and written by her and Justin Peters. And the note she writes is, we came to chatter, we lucked out, Tony was there, and Logan's day was once again totally made. Logan, I guess, is her beau. I mentioned to Tony that I'd listened for the first time on the day you guys were giving him his birthday shout-out, and before then I had no idea you guys included music in the podcast. So he told me to send you a song of mine. I'm a Nashville singer-songwriter. Will you let him know I came through on my promise? She sings beautifully.
Beautiful.
Lovely. She sings beautifully.
Yes.
And if we can help people in their careers and give ourselves entertainment at the same time, that's great. That's Leanna McGuire. Thank you so much. I think if you go to Nashville to sing, you've got to be at least pretty good. I mean, I think you're testing yourself in the cauldron in live music in America.
I watched The Voice, I confess, and so many of those kids who are great singers competing are all in Nashville.
Yeah, I think that's where they go. Mm-hmm. And they also go there, as we will talk about later in the show, to get catfish.
Just to
throw it on the ice. Tim Kirkjian.
Criminal act.
Yes, Tim Kirkjian joins us now, and we move from the sublime like this song to the ridiculous, to the thing that Joe Torre should be fired. This is the grievous, most grievous miscarriage of justice I've ever seen in a suspension of a player. Well, I shouldn't say that, because the Tom Brady thing was even worse, because there was no grounds for that whatsoever. But the Harper suspension, relative to the Strickland suspension, is ludicrous.
Worst treatment of any politician ever, trust me.
It's just awful.
Witch hunt?
Timmy, you can defend it if you want. It's just awful to me.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Tony, but there's very few buts here. But if you go to the mound and you punch a guy in the face, they can't let you get away with that, whether or not you had a right to do it. And he clearly had a right to do it.
Right.
And even though he's going to get suspended for four games, he was seeing red at that point. Guys just lose control and you get hit, and it hurts that much. I've talked to many guys who charged the mound. This is what happens. But this is the way things work. And baseball is not going to allow someone to run to the mound and get in a fight without suspension.
Oh, you know what? I'm okay with that. As long as the pitcher's suspension is five times longer than Harper's suspension. This is a rogue act by a Giants pitcher based out of personal animus that he carried with him for 3 years. His own catcher, Buster Posey, an MVP and a three-time champion, didn't get out of his squat to do anything about this. That I'm not saying you can't suspend Harper, because you should, but the relative math of the two suspensions seems ridiculous to me, Tim. Ridiculous.
Yes, I would totally agree with that, Tony. It was all Strickland doing this, and you're right. He was doing it for the absolute wrong reason. Look, I'm not for throwing at anybody at any point, but I really do understand that if someone cheap shot somebody or hit somebody on purpose, that guy should pay.
Yes.
And the way you pay in baseball is through retaliation. I will never, ever understand how you throw at somebody intentionally because he's better than you. Well, I can't get him out, so I'm just going to hit him with a pitch.
He's going to get on base anyway.
It is just so terrible. It just shows you that some baseball players are brought up to think, well, if you can't get him out, then just hit him with a pitch. That is so terrible.
What do you make of Posey's reaction in this?
Well, I was confused because I'm not sure I've ever seen a catcher just stand there and allow this to happen. Now, Harper went pretty quickly. Usually there's a little bit more. He just pointed the bat, and then he went. There wasn't that much time, but Posey never moved. Now, it might be as simple as, I'm not going to get in the way of this. Our pitcher deserves whatever is coming to him. And Jake Arrieta said something the other day kind of interesting, that, look, just go let him duke it out and get it over with. And that's kind of what happened because everyone was so late in arriving. Normally you don't get to square off and swing at a guy like both of those guys did. So I thought Posey would do something about it, and I think this is him basically saying, this guy acted alone, we're going to let him take it alone.
I don't want to sound too much like a homer for Bryce Harper, so I want to acknowledge that I suspect he is thought of less kindly around baseball than he is in my house. I mean, I suspect he's thought of as a hot dog, right?
Far less now, Tony, than he used to be. I mean, he was the cockiest kid in the world when he came up, and I frankly can't blame him for that with everything he went through in his life. You know, going to junior college after his sophomore year, junior year in high school, it's ridiculous. But he's gotten a whole lot better about hitting monstrous home runs and then running around the bases. So I think he's much more like now than he used to be because of what he's accomplished and the way he's presented himself, which is a much more mature manner than when he first came up.
I remember Cole Hamels hitting him because he threw, as he does all the time, threw his helmet off when he was running to second base, and Cole Hamels said, I can't have this, and just plunked him absolutely for no reason at all other than that. But at this point, he's an MVP. He's having a great year. He has already been almost choked to death by one of his own teammates, and so I think he's gained a little bit of stature. And it leads me to this question. I say this all the time about Adam Silver, that I don't even know that he's alive, if he's living and breathing, because he lets the players do whatever they want in basketball. Does Rob Manfred step in? Who hears the appeal? Because the process is unbelievably convoluted. It can go on for weeks and maybe even months. Who hears it, and is Manfred going to step in?
Well, Rob Manfred steps in. He stepped in on the Red Sox Orioles dust-up with Manny Machado a couple weeks ago and basically got on the phone with both teams and said, all right, knock it off. I don't want any more of this. You guys are going to stop throwing at each other immediately. Commissioners normally don't do that. So there are all sorts of other people, Joe Torre included, involved in Major League Baseball. But the commissioner is getting involved now, as he should, and telling people, look, I understand this is part of the game, but it's going to end now. We're not going to have any hijinks after this, which is why nothing happened last night, nor should it have happened, because, Tony, that would have been 10 times worse if the Nationals had said, all right, we're going to hit Buster Posey tonight because you hit our best guy last night. That's not going to happen, and that should never happen.
Do you think, and again, I'm just dealing with the issue of fairness in terms of the relative time of suspensions to the players, do you think that Harper's suspension will ultimately be decreased?
Well, if so, it'll only be by a game, Tony. I mean, the history tells us if you run to the mound, you get four games. That's what's happened like the last few times it's happened. And if it's cut, maybe it's cut by one game, and that's it. The good thing is the Nationals are in such a good place that they can probably afford four games without Bryce Harper. But it comes back to, again, Tony, what Earl Weaver used to tell me. He used to tell me that he told his players, don't go to the mound. Don't get suspended. Don't get in a fight because people are going to lose games. And he says, and our players are better than their players. We're going to lose on that exchange, so don't get involved. And here, a pedestrian middle reliever is suspended for six games, and the best player in the league is suspended for four games. The Nationals lose on that exchange.
Yeah, that Boz wrote about that today. It was an interesting column. And when you say the best player in the National League, the best player in baseball is Mike Trout, and he's out. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. He slid head first, put his hands out there, and ripped a ligament in his thumb. What do you make of his injury, and on the larger topic of the best player in baseball being hidden on a bad team that's already 11 games behind in its own division. It's a sub-500 team. What does baseball think of that?
Well, there's not much baseball can do. His contract kicks in next year at $30 million a year or around there for three more years. So he's going to get paid enormously starting next season, and he is the best player in the game. And this is really unfortunate for Trout to go down like this, because the Angels aren't going to the playoffs no matter what. But the game really suffers when the best player is out for 2 months like he's going to be.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to miss just watching him play. I had people say, well, he shouldn't be sliding anymore. First off, you can't tell a major league player who's wildly competitive like Mike Trout, don't try to steal a base and don't slide because you might get hurt. Nobody thinks that way. Your instincts take over. You play the game the way it's supposed to be played. And if you get hurt doing it, you do. It's just really unfortunate that Trout suffered that injury.
By the way, what a bunch of bottom feeders the California teams are. Like five of the, like, okay, the Dodgers are okay. Isn't everybody else basically in last place?
The Dodgers are really good, Tony, and red hot. The Giants right now are really bad, and of course so are the A's, who are rebuilding, and the Padres are terrible, and the Angels are barely 500. So, yes, you're right. The California teams are not very good, but the Dodgers are red hot, moved into first place last night, but they're the aberrant team on the West Coast at the moment.
All right, let me get to Aaron Judge, who I never heard of until, I guess, last September, and he's gigantic, and he's killing the ball. How good is he? Where does he come from? How do players like that get to the Yankees, who usually strip their farm system to make trades for more older, established players?
Right. He's a Southern California kid. He's a high-round draft choice, and he's a great athlete, Tony. This is the key. He's 6'7", 282.
Big.
Watch him run the bases.
Big.
Watch him play right field. You'll be amazed how athletic somebody that big is. He could have played basketball. He probably could have played any sport. He chose baseball. But like any really big guy trying to play baseball, it's not an easy game for anyone, especially someone of that size. You can chop up a hitter who's that big, and he got chopped to pieces last year, struck out 44% of the time, and nine games in a row struck out at least twice. No one in Major League history has ever done that, and yet this year he's cut down his strikeouts, he's figured out the strike zone, he's a way better hitter than he was last year, and Ken Singleton, who played in the big leagues for years and years and now is the Yankee broadcaster, told me, I have never seen anyone hit a baseball as hard as Aaron Judge hits it. Never.
Really?
And Ken Singleton's played with a lot of great players over the years.
So not Giancarlo Stanton, not Reggie Jackson, not people who are famed for how quick it gets out and how long it goes?
Right. Now, others, Stanton is hitting it much farther than Judge is on average, but nobody has hit it harder than him.
That's interesting.
And that's because he's just so big and so strong. Tony, I grew up here. I watched Frank Howard play, one of my favorite players of all time, and I think Aaron Judge is bigger than him when you stand next to him. His shoulders are enormous. He's way bigger than a doorway. He's enormous, and yet he's got skills and athleticism that most people his size do not have.
The biggest player I was ever around, well, I guess it was McGuire, but other than McGuire, who was just outrageously tall, it was Jim Thome. Jim Thome was enormous. I mean, he had shoulders, just enormous shoulders, but he was not athletic at all. I mean, he was not.
Yeah, and Aaron Judge is a good 4 inches taller than Jim Thome.
Yeah.
And weighs more than Jim Thome. You're right, Jim Thome was
wide.
A really big man, but Aaron Judge is bigger than all of them, and him next to Stanton, he's bigger than Stanton, and it's not close.
All right, let me get you out of here on this, something that gives me great joy to even contemplate that the Cubs are lousy. It just, because I just want to just stick it to Wilbon so badly. Is this aberrant, or is this something we're going to see all year? And is it all about Schwarber in the leadoff?
Well, Schwarber's out of the leadoff spot now. This is aberrant. This is going to turn. I'm certain of that. But it's taken a whole lot longer than I thought. Their offense is not what it was last year. Already been shut out five times, six times all last year. Their defense, which was the best in the league last year, isn't close to being that good this year. And their starting pitching ERA is about a run and a half higher than it was last year. Hendricks, Arrieta, a bunch of the guys in that rotation aren't the same pitchers that they were last year. this team has a lot of work to do, but in a relatively weak division, I think they're going to find a way to win the division and go to the playoffs, but not the same team as last year by any means.
Good. Thank you, Timmy. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Tim Kirkjian, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The title of the song is Gone. It's from Cyrus, the Cyrus and Charlie Trio. Although Cyrus and Charlie would sound like a duo to me. The two frontmen of the band are Cyrus and Charlie, two friends from Gaithersburg, now residing in Frederick and Germantown, respectively, who've known each other since elementary school. The third member is the combined spirit of the drummer from Spinal Tap, who died in a bizarre gardening accident, and the drummer who choked on vomit, the source of which remains unknown to this very day.
Like this a lot.
Always remember, you can't dust for vomit. This is sent to us by Cyrus Chiguri, I think his name is.
Yes.
Michael, people are sending us music, and it's wonderful music. If they want to continue to do it, how do they do it?
If they want to send us music, as always, send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And this would be a good time. Apropos of Jeannie, when I walked in today, Jeannie, what did you say about my shirt?
Is that a Johnny O shirt?
And I said yes, and you said...
And what struck me about it is...
The coral
I've
color.
I've known you 30 years. I've never seen you...
In coral.
In coral... And if you told me you were wearing coral and I hadn't seen it,
you
would
said
say
no.
That's not a good look
coral
for you.
Coral and orange clash.
Yes.
But,
knows that.
But I like it.
But
he's getting ready for Boca.
Right.
Yes.
Full time.
Condo in Boca. Absolutely.
Full time in Boca. And Michael, this leads us into a discussion of Johnny O and the particular code that we can offer for Father's Day in which people can save a bunch of money and get great clothing.
We are in the middle of a Father's Day push, and you can use the promo code Dr. Tony when you check out at johnnyo.com, and that'll get you 30% off.
That's pretty good.
And if you forget that, the Tony K code is actually still up there too, but that only gets 25.
I think you go for the 30.
Go Dr. Tony. Yeah.
It's very nice clothing. Nigel, you have some, well, before we have news.
I would never wear that color.
Well, you only wear black,
to
although today you're not. You're wearing blue and white, which is so odd. Nobody knew it was you.
I know.
Providence Classical School joyfully announces commencement exercise in the lives of the 2017 senior class. Please join Christopher J. Halloran and the Providence community. This was Saturday, May 27th, so that was on Saturday, at the Kent Klein United Methodist Church in Spring, Texas. Our congratulations to him.
Congrats.
Congratulations. What? All right, you got news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and further details coming out now about Tiger Woods.
Oh, can I mention one other thing?
Absolutely.
I got this really long and involved and sort of nice thing here from Zachary Stempler, Binghamton University, who was an economics grad, and I addressed his, the commencement was his, because we went A to E.
He just made the cutoff.
Yeah, econ was the last thing that we did, and he wants a job, and he said he sent me a long email. He said, I'm not expecting anything to come about this, let alone a response, but if you just read this, know you have a fellow Binghamton Bearcat and Hewlett Bulldog who's a big fan of yours. He wants to work at ESPN. That's what he wants.
Well, so, we need servers here at Chatter.
We need now.
If you come to Washington, D.C. and you become a server here, then I'll do the best I can for you.
That's a good
at
end.
ESPN.
That seems to be prove your worth on the floor, and then we'll see what we can do.
I saw your speech at Binghamton. You were explicit. They cannot have your job.
Cannot. And they can't have the president's job either. Right. Joke can't have that. What do you want? What do you got?
Again, some more details coming out now about Tiger Woods' arrest for a DUI charge early Monday morning. Apparently, the police had to wake up Tiger Woods when they approached
Dash cam video due out today.
Yeah.
Not as we're taping this, but due out today.
His vehicle was running.
But just to clarify, they didn't have to wake him up. They chose to.
They could have let him sleep and just sit there in the middle of the road. According to the report...
Well, I think he was not in the middle of the road. I think he was off to
his
side.
He was on the shoulder.
Well, yes, but didn't he have two blown-out tires?
Couple flat tires.
He did on the driver's side.
And some damage to the bumpers and maybe the side of the car.
Yes. He might have run over a couple things.
Well, yeah, possibly. Yeah. According to the report, the officer said Woods had extremely slow and slurred speech, struggled with several roadside tasks... and then he changes.
Well, you know what they ask you to do? They ask you to recite the alphabet backwards.
Right.
I don't know that I could do that right now.
You know,
it takes
this
me a long
from
time.
Experience?
No, it's that was one movies. Of the things that they said.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
And the trick is that what you know, drunk people start would say, I couldn't even do that if I was sober. And they say, okay, well, now you're done. So, and he
inadmissible.
Said,
he admitted to taking four different kinds of pills.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Four.
The police did say he was cooperative as much as possible.
Prescription.
He agreed to take a breath test and a urine test.
And he passed
it. And he blew a
Zero.
He got,
there was no alcohol.
It was a Blutarski, which is what you want.
Zero.
Yeah, when you go in there. He also had some strange ideas about where he was going, where he's coming from. Said he was coming from L.A. on his way to Orange County before saying, you know, actually, I don't know where I am.
Right.
So again, I think the overall reaction is just one of great sadness.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't think this further report removes that feeling of sadness for Tiger.
It is. I mean, you sit here and you speculate about somebody that you don't know and his medical condition. And it's probably, you're probably off when you do something like this. It was reported immediately, by the way, that he refused to take a breathalyzer
right.
test and alcohol was involved and the car reeked from alcohol. And none of that was true.
Right.
None of that was true. So I use that as caution to say what I'm about to say now. But it strikes me as altogether possible, given the four different sets of pills that he recited that he was taking and the amount of time and the amount of operations he has had to fix a bad back, it strikes me as altogether possible that he, if he is not addicted to prescription medicine, he is dependent upon prescription medicine. And that when he said, within the last week, it feels great to be pain-free, now you'd step back one step and you go, well, how did he get to be pain-free? Is he pain-free naturally? Is he pain-free chemically? And that his path, which I may have thought was a little bit easy to get back into golf, now strikes me as being harder, harder by far.
Only one of those pills was a pain pill. The others were anti-inflammatories.
Vicodin.
Yeah. Right.
Vioxx, which I used to take all the time because it was great, was taken off the market 10 years ago because it killed people.
So I think it's quite possible
it's a bit of a problem, isn't it?
There was a mix there
yes.
that produced that stupor in him.
But absolutely, but don't you think it's also possible that he reaches for these things often because they have helped him over the last X amount of years?
He has a prescription.
Yes,
a doctor has prescribed it. I mean, I don't think at this point it's safe to make that assumption that he's overusing.
I also don't think it's safe.
I was going to say, you only hope he doesn't have a doctor like, you know, Michael Jackson's doctor. Or Dr.
Tony.
Yeah, what do you
Or me.
Dr. Right. Tony, yeah. What do you need? Yeah, there you go, man. I'm your
well,
guy.
Well, I would... Okay, I mean, just my opinion, not speaking for Tony or on behalf of the show, but I would assume he almost certainly has a doctor who can get him whatever he wants or feels like he needs at a given time.
Sure.
And I am very saddened for Tiger Woods, but I also don't have a very long leash for someone who's going to take a handful of prescription meds and then go play bumper cars, which it sounds like maybe
I don't
he's
know.
Doing.
I don't know that he did that. I don't know that that was the cause and effect. I don't know that that was one leading into two. I'm very happy there was no alcohol involved because that would be reckless, totally reckless. But I don't know what this is.
It sounds like he's this lonely guy. He needs some handler or somebody living with him to say, don't go out of here at 3 o'clock in the morning after taking all those pain pills. I mean, don't go out where you don't even know what state of the union you're in.
Yeah. Bad. Sad.
Whenever I come close to making bad decisions in the wake of my father's death, who passed about 6 months ago, I think of Tiger Woods. Because I think of, like, what happened. Like, all this crazy stuff happened after his dad was gone. I think, right. like, in some ways, having that guy kind of keeps you on the straight and narrow, even if you don't realize it. You know, I mean, there's hopefully for most of us, there's other people in our lives who help keep us making proper decisions. But
what else you got?
A tough story involving comedian Kathy Griffin, Mr. Tony. We all knew her from doing a stand-up routine. She was on Seinfeld a number of times, has been the co-host of CNN's New Year's Eve coverage, won a couple of Emmys for her show, My Life on the D-List.
You may know her as the now unrecognizable Kathy Griffin.
Yes, she appears to have had some work done over the years. Stepped over the line with some...
Well, no, didn't step over the line.
Yeah, jumped, sprinted
jumped
over.
Jumped over the line.
Some
catapulted.
Photographs she took, and she had said she's not afraid to do images that make noise. When she did a photo shoot, and in this shoot, she was holding a prop of what...
Let's not be too specific.
Appeared to be the president's head.
Yeah.
And was really graphic.
Yeah.
And she had a very graphic
quote
out of it.
You give comedians a very wide berth.
Right.
Much more so than everybody else because of what they're attempting to do. This is beyond, it's just beyond anything reasonable.
Yes,
and she has apologized, you know, within the last 10 or 12 hours or something like that. I don't know how this will affect her job status with CNN.
Well,
because Anderson Cooper, who is her partner on this show, said it was appalling.
Yes.
Appalling what she did,
well,
which it was.
CNN said that it's evaluating our New Year's Eve coverage.
Yeah. Trump has tweeted about it in the last several hours, saying Kathy Griffin should be ashamed of herself. My children, especially my 11-year-old son, Barron, are having a hard time with this sick! Exclamation point.
Even Chelsea Clinton tweeted out and was like,
as well she should.
Yeah. As well she should. Yeah, but I'm as just saying this is not should. Like a partisan issue.
No, it's just terrible.
Absolutely sick.
It's terrible.
We'll take you to Pittsburgh, Mr. Tony. The scene of what I guess has been called a crime over
this. This is very important. This is the most important story we're going to do in the news. This is the big one.
36-year-old Jacob Waddle threw a dead catfish over the glass.
Well, not just a dead catfish. Okay, a catfish that he bought in Nashville and transported to Pittsburgh and put in his pants.
So his catfish underpants.
In his compression shorts.
A catfish he brought
as he entered
state
the
lines.
Game. He brought the catfish, a dead state. Animal, I guess a fish is an animal, a fish, a dead fish,
right.
Across state lines, many states.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And as he said himself, it was a dumb redneck. He's a dumb redneck with a bad idea. And so he was ejected.
Well, he threw it on the ice.
Threw it on the ice.
And people in a great celebratory mode. And this is, of course, this started in Detroit.
Yes, with the octopus.
In Detroit, they throw an octopus on the ice every 5 seconds or something
right.
like that.
Well, in Nashville, they do throw
They
catfish.
Throw a catfish.
That's the thing they do, yeah.
So he was ejected and charged with disorderly conduct, possessing instruments of crime, in this case, the fish.
An instrument of crime.
Right. Instrument of
a
crime.
A dead catfish is an instrument of crime and disturbing a meeting.
Right.
In this case, the game.
Or possessions, yes, the game.
The game.
Yes.
Okay, so now what do you think is an appropriate punishment?
Well, first let me say, as a veteran cook, that is the best use of a catfish I've heard in a long time.
Right. So, did you see pictures of it?
Yeah.
I did.
Okay. I think he should have been made to eat the catfish.
Ooh. That's harsh.
Yeah, and that would be the end of that. You know, and I think I said
this
yesterday on
TV. What about
when
people chuck hats? They've never been charged with instruments of crime or disturbing a meeting.
No.
Oh, that's that's a home ice thing.
So I would think that, and I said this the other day on PTI, that in retaliation, someone from Pittsburgh, when they get to Nashville, should throw Blake Shelton onto the ice. All those Nashville guys. Now, it was celebrated by Carrie Underwood.
Yes.
Whose hubby is a member of the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. Celebrated, that was a great and heroic gesture. What do you make of throwing dead fish on the ice? Or anywhere, actually.
You know, I hate to, like, encourage crime, but I love it when people do come up with creative things to throw on the ice or do. It's always fun to watch.
It's not a crime.
It's like it's like dancing in the end zone, you know? Come on, let it happen.
I mean, don't say authorities need to stand out on this.
He sprayed cologne on himself as he put the dead catfish in his underpants.
Thinking it through, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, did he fly up there?
I don't know
if
he flew or drove.
TSA.
He could not have gotten through.
Catfish in his pants.
He could have put it in a suitcase to get it through.
Zero chance he did that.
They're very strict about carrying dead fish on planes.
I thought it was wonderful.
I think it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the charges that he faces are wonderful, too.
I wonder what Caps fans would throw.
Ovechkin.
White flags.
Yeah.
Years of tears.
Sorry.
Golf balls that they're getting ready to use in May as they go out early.
Golf balls and tees.
Yeah.
Speaking of fish, Mr. Tony, there was a 16-foot, 3,500-pound great white shark spotted very near here.
Where?
About two.
Very, like Bethesda?
Within 2 miles of Cape Henlopen.
Cape Henlopen.
Oh, Cape Henlopen.
Yeah. Yeah. Cape Henlopen.
Right.
Yeah, so, right near Rehoboth.
And was seen.
How big?
3,500 pounds, 16 feet long.
Whoa, I'm not going there this weekend.
They've tagged it. They tagged this shark several years ago. They've been tracking. Her name is Mary Lee. And Mary Lee was also pinged right near Assateague
Mary
Island.
Mary Lee Coffee.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Eating ponies.
Assateague and Chicopee.
Ponies.
Oh, so she is going up and down the East Coast.
Just, yeah.
Right. Going to eat the ponies?
Camping out. I mean, wouldn't you? Look, there's a free
ponies
buffet.
In the water.
Let's not just
dinner.
Gloss over this. A 16-foot great white in Chincoteague or Assateague is something that recently as 10 years ago would have been like
fiction. But how far out? It's not like it was cruising along the shoreline, right?
How do we
it
know?
Wasn't nipping at people's
how close?
Toes.
A couple miles would be
close. It does not say how
won't
close.
Keep
it
me just, out of the water.
Within 2 miles.
No, it, had a, yeah. it held within up a sign miles. Said, send me to Amity.
We'll work for food.
Yeah. Yes. Great. That's great.
Amity, by the way, you know, does mean friendship.
Yes, I know. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, what do we have?
We're out of water. Old Guy with Howard.
Old Guy Radio with Howard Fine. When we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right. This is the Upside.com ad. And they asked me in this ad to talk about my personal experiences in booking travel and getting on airplanes and going to hotels.
Limited.
And Gene, who has described how long she knows me, knows that I don't actually do this.
Not only do you not travel, but you don't know how to go online to find travel.
I don't know how to do that. So I'm going to take a certain amount of liberty here, and I'm going to suggest to you that if you travel a lot, this is aimed at people who do business travel. It is not aimed at me because I don't do this. It's aimed at people that do business travel. And what will happen is Upside.com will save you money and your company money, big money on business travel, and you will get a gift card of consequence every trip you buy. They asked me to say that I've done this, but I haven't done this.
You've not done it, but you've seen it happen on my computer.
Right. Michael has shown me how to do this. Okay. So what happens is you get a gift card, you save the company money, you have other options, an earlier flight, the same kind of hotel down the block, and it gives you the opportunity to choose from these things. Right, Michael?
Yeah, we chose the nicest options. Ritz. We checked all the boxes for you.
Yeah, and you can, by the way. I'm there now because I have some travel coming up that I'm checking out. I mean, you can use it for leisure travel as well.
So yes, and it would get you even more in gift cards, and it would cost your employer even less, and that's the beauty of Upside. Having a little bit of flexibility gets you more. Upside.com is the real deal. Now when you use promo code Tony, you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon gift card from your first trip. That's another thing. For example, if you gave me an Amazon gift card, I would look at it, I would turn it upside down, much like my dog, Chessie. I would sniff it, I would lick it, and then I would throw it away because it's useless to me.
John used it at Subway.
Yeah, I could get a Subway sandwich.
Yeah, that's my name, Tony, to get a $100 gift card. Save big on travel, get a big gift card every trip. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. There's a minimum purchase required. See the site for complete details.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. As if you're in the restaurant with us, you know we're taping completely out of order. This is, I believe these are the Rooftop Singers,
yes,
and this
is
called Walk Right In, Sit Right Down, Baby Let Your Mind Roll
yeah,
On.
That's
this
right.
song is utter garbage.
Everybody's talking about a new way of walking.
The reason we're playing this song is because Peter Yarrow, who walked into my house some years back, is 79 years old today. This is folk music. This was very big before the Beatles. There was a word called hootenanny of people who sat around and sang folk music and wore matching sweaters to do it. It's clown time now. If you want to see the roots of folk music and you want to see a very funny movie, there are two movies I would recommend. One is Inside Llewyn Davis, which is a Coen Brothers movie, which presages the beginning of Bob Dylan. And the other is A Mighty Wind, which is a Christopher Guest movie, which is absolutely brilliant. And I'm going to leave the area of critical commentary right there.
Well, if I could just add one further thing about that song. It was done by the Rooftop Singers.
Terrible.
Covered by a guy named, the original was by Gus Cannon, who was...
Gus Cannon, Freddie Cannon's brother?
I don't know if he was related to Freddie Cannon.
Freddie Boom Boom.
Cannon's Jug Stompers was his band.
Yeah, it just...
And he was flat broke. And so when the Rooftop Singers recorded, it became a big hit. He got royalties, which was nice, because that winter he had to sell his banjo to pay his heating bill.
Yeah, no, that sort of dedication to that sort of music is moving to me. I just didn't, I never particularly liked the music.
No,
just,
me neither.
It was nothing special. I liked Howard's music, the classics, of course.
Yeah, we had a jug band period as well.
Well, jug band is one thing. If you're John Sebastian, that's
that
one
was
thing,
great,
but
you know.
That's a whole different deal. The intergalactic editor of the HuffPost, Howard Fineman, has dropped by, and we start, of course, particularly in light of last night's tweet, with where are we now?
Oh, my God, where are we now? Where is the president now? Yeah. I mean, that's what everybody's talking about this morning. This was at 12:06 a.m.
Was technically this morning.
Technically this morning. And the tweet was, despite the constant negative press
Covfefe.
I'm not sure if there's an accepted pronunciation of that yet.
It doesn't make any sense.
But that's
sense.
All anybody's talking about this morning, and it's in a way it's appropriate for Trump because Trump was made by tweets. The founder of Twitter has apologized to the world for creating Donald Trump, literally, and this while on the one hand is very trivial. On the other hand, sort of makes you wonder what the heck Donald Trump is up to. What's he doing? What's he doing in there? There was a great Tom Waits talking song called "What's He Doing in There?" And that's sort of what you wonder about Donald Trump. And this comes in the context of his global trip where he's going around supposedly cementing relations with world leaders. And they're wondering, who do you talk to in America? Do you talk to Donald Trump or do you talk to people who aren't tweeting insane, nonsensical things at 1 a.m.
To give him a little bit of credit, mm-hmm. at 6 a.m. he came back and made a joke about it.
Yeah.
After having had maybe 4 to 5 hours worth of sleep, he looked at it, I guess, and said, what in God's name was that? So I'll go outside in instead of going inside out. I'll go to Europe and the Middle East first. What do you suspect are the results of his first big trip?
Well, I think the results are that people in those countries are trying to figure out whom to talk to here. In other words, Donald Trump made a lot of big statements, shook a lot of hands.
Elbowed the Montenegro guy
The guy from Montenegro.
It's the best thing he's done.
Box out.
I mean, because let's be fair.
Alpha male move.
Get that guy out of
here. Get the guy out of here. I agree. Yeah. I agree with him on that one. Yeah, get out of here. Too. You're trying to get in my shot. Get out of here.
Yeah, you're Montenegro. Yeah, get out.
Exactly. I thought was fine.
You're a warm-up act. Even for me.
Yeah, that was fine. But in Saudi Arabia, in Israel, in the Vatican, and at the G7 in Taormina, Italy, and at the NATO meeting in Brussels, Trump was trying to throw his weight around and make grand statements and pick fights where it suited his political purposes and be chummy where that suited his political purposes how to fight the war on terror. But his unpredictability, his aggressiveness in certain circumstances has left the leaders of these countries, as far as I can tell from my reporting, wondering, you know, how seriously do we take all this? In other words, here in Washington, the ambassadors that I spoke with yesterday, including the German ambassador, said, you know, We have a very strong relationship with the United States that goes back to after World War II. We set up this system kind of after World War II to try to preserve peace in Europe and in the world. And by and large, it's kind of worked. Does Trump really want to radically change it? That's what the Europeans worry about. On the other side, the Saudis seem to be very happy working with Donald Trump because he's showering praise on them, wanting to work closely with them and so forth. They're investing in the United States, et cetera. But nobody knows how much he can really deliver. Nobody knows how seriously to take what he says. And the real diplomats around the world are kind of hunkering down and trying to work with whatever people they regard as sensible in the American government, and not necessarily with Trump himself, which is a weird situation.
Well, one of the questions I wrote down yesterday, based on the background that we in the United States, we've never seen anybody quite like him before in this particular office. They certainly have never seen anything like this before. What do you think they make of him?
Well, I can tell you at least the diplomats I spoke with here yesterday, working on a piece about this, said, "Well, we we love America. We believe in America." Oddly enough, some of these diplomats seem to have more faith in the durability of American institutions than we do at this point. So they're reluctant to publicly dismiss the president of the United States. I mean, he's only president of the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got the finger on the button and the finger on the Twitter feed at the same time. But they're looking to they don't want to dismantle the architecture of the last 72 years. And they're sort of girding themselves against Trump. And by the way, that kind of thing plays right into Trump's own base. In other words, Trump is the great disruptor. That's how he ran. That's how he's governing. But there's a thin line between being a disruptor and being just so unpredictable that nobody will rely on you.
We are a big country. We're physically a large country, mm-hmm. hundreds of millions of people.
Right.
Europe's a pretty big continent, but it's divided into a lot of different countries. In your estimation, they just rolled over somebody new in Britain recently. They rolled over somebody new in France an hour and a half ago. Is there a leader that speaks for Europe? And what is that? If there is, what is that person's relationship with Trump? Because if it's Merkel, it's not a good relationship.
Right. If there is one person at this point, it is Angela Merkel, the chancellor, who's got her own reelection race that she's running over there. And I think there's a kind of backlash brewing to the Brexit thing, which what has got the current round of this started. And in a way, the Brexit vote in Britain, where they voted to get out of the European community, economically, it was a precursor for Trump's election. But now there's a backlash to that. Theresa May, the conservative British prime minister, called a snap election, thinking that she would enhance her majority to push through the Brexit exit. But it now looks quite possible that that she won't win a majority. That she will have been too smart by half, and that the Labour Party will come back. And similarly, in Germany, Trump has strengthened Merkel's hand as a unifier of Europe, and so the Trump moment, in a way, seems to have passed. And the people who want unity in Germany, and if for no other reason than to oppose Donald Trump, are in the ascendancy. So Merkel's the person. Yes, there's not a good relationship between Merkel and Trump, even though the people around them are trying to say that there is. There isn't. They're completely opposite. They don't like each other particularly. There's no bond there. And Merkel has taken him on. She's taken him on. And Trump, whose only tactical theory is to punch back harder than you are punched, is punching back at Angela Merkel, which is just going to scare people in Europe and probably create havoc.
All right, so let me get closer to home as we go outside in. Jared Kushner, who is a son-in-law and a trusted advisor, one would think, what is it that he is thought to have done wrong? Wrong now, because I've seen McMaster defend what he has done. Right. So what is he thought to have done wrong?
Well, let's start with the fact that when he began doing whatever it was he was doing, he was still a private citizen, and there was no Trump government yet, and he was not an official in government. That's the first thing.
Well, I mean, I just saw that movie Bridge of Spies. Right. And it seemed to me that the Tom Hanks character was a private citizen and was being told to do things, and they would be denied if they ever came to light.
Right. So that's true.
That's make believe.
But there was also
but that was with government.
That was with government sanction. Okay. That was with government sanction and government.
Well, this is government sanction in the sense that Trump wasn't president. Okay.
So no, they were all private citizens at that point. That's not acting on behalf of or under the color of government. That's the first thing. The second thing is, reportedly, what he was trying to do was set up a back channel, but not any ordinary back channel. And the way things have worked since, for example, Roosevelt and Churchill in World War II or Cuban negotiations or whatever, a, quote, back channel is set up that's outside the normal course of systems of government, but of which the rest of government is aware. In other words, the intelligence community knows that this is happening.
This was an end run on
them.
No,
this was a total end run around the so-called community, which are the 16 intelligence agencies that are involved in intelligence.
They're going to fry him. They're going to leak him to death.
So and what's an end run around the sitting administration.
And the sitting administration, exactly. And so what's really happening here, Tony, this whole story about Russia is really a war between whatever it is Trump is up to and the entire intelligence community of the United States.
It's an insurgent against the established power group.
Right, and totally outside of it and outside the thinking of it and the structure of it. And inside the intelligence community, they're scared and antagonistic because, number one, they were all reared on the notion that Russia is the great enemy. I mean, this is the legacy of the Cold War.
Because they were.
They were. And to his credit, Mitt Romney said in 2012, Russia is the biggest threat that we face. And I think
McCain
in terms of trying to destabilize the rest of the world, that's true. So the intelligence community, when they finally woke up to the fact that Donald Trump might actually become president, they initially dismissed it like everybody else. They've gone crazy. And a lot of the leaks that you've seen are the product of the old intelligence establishment, which was in power under Barack Obama, leaking like crazy to try to undermine Donald Trump. And Trump is saying, hey, you know, you punch me, I'm going to punch back just as hard. So far, he hasn't been able to get the initiative. He hasn't been able to turn it into a war on leaks. The leaks themselves are still overpowering his effort to turn the thing around. One reason why he wants to bring in a war room with Corey Lewandowski and David Bossie and all these tough guys is to try to turn that around. But this, make no mistake, this is a war to the end between the intelligence community that fears Russia and Donald Trump, who doesn't want to be told what to do and for some reason has a special affinity for Russia and Vladimir Putin.
Are there people who are particularly in this? It would seem to me that communication staff would be caught in the middle of this, and they would have apps like a guy like Sean Spicer. it just seems to be walking out there like a punching bag.
Well, yesterday for sure.
Day.
I've covered millions of White House press conferences in person and written about them, watched them on TV. I've never seen one quite like that, where Spicer just came out and said, "You know, I give up.
Yeah,
I'm out of here." You could tell he was waiting to get fired or whatever.
Yeah,
and he read official statements from lawyers and he said, "I have no idea. Ask the president." And he just couldn't wait to get off of that stage.
Okay, so I get you out of here on this, and I don't know if you've thought of this, and it just occurred to me now. Is there someone in your experience, someone on that side of the aisle, maybe not as far to that side of the aisle as Trump, but is there a savior out there? Is there somebody, if they turned to you and they said, "Howard, give us the person, man or woman, who can help us out of this, because this is really bad now," who would that person be?
Bryce Harper.
Okay, that's good.
He's got all 4 days to help.
Okay.
Howard Feinman, boys and girls. Let's have some applause for Howard Feinman.
Yay.
We have a crowd here.
This is the opposite of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, I realize. Yeah. I live right down the street. Mr. Rogers was a really nice guy, and this is not that show.
No, this is not. All right, we will take a break. We will come back with an email and jingles.
That's
when
right.
we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. See the podcast, eat some food, spend some money, 'cause we're open at Cheddar.
Oh, that's great, man. Sounds like something you hear on Broadway.
This is written and performed by John Cruteau, who said, "I'm trying to get the word out on breakfast now being served at Cheddar. You know how the sign out front has been getting the word out on Chad's? I grew up in the part of Virginia that Luke Russert excoriates, getting the post delivered and religiously flipping through to get to your columns. My brother Tom would turn me on to your radio show, and now that I live in L.A., I haven't missed a single minute of the podcast. I'm a bi-coastal little who can't wait to try Wilbon's chili the next time I'm in town." And he signs it, "Thank you, and deport trots." John Cruteau, which is very,
that's
very
great
nice.
Jingle.
Yeah. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thank you to Tim Kirkchen and Howard Feinman for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Harry's Razors and Upside.com. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes, Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. J.C. Healy is here today with Uriel. Uriel, the greatest trainer in the history of the world.
Oh, yes.
So if you need training, just find Uriel later in the day, and Uriel.
And good news, compliments of Peter. You going to address that at all?
Yes, Peter has.
Just to hold him closer to the fire?
No, Peter has said that our sign has been found after being lost for 2 weeks in Baltimore. Which sounds like a Tiger Woods situation.
Stringer Bell.
I don't know.
Yeah. Omar's coming situation.
And that our sign should be here within the next 2 to 6 months yes. as it's transported after being, you know, dipped in acrylics in Chesapeake Bay outside of Baltimore.
And this is bad news for the show because we all know the Cheddar sign going up kills content for the show.
Oh, no. There'll be something.
But he was threatening to install the sign tomorrow morning.
The good news is he said the corkboard they were going to have to figure out, so we'll still have that.
From Jeff Schneider, "Dear Dr. Tony, I very much enjoyed your personal tribute to Frank DeFore, describing him as larger than life at 6'4", Clark Gable, good looks, graceful. But then you went on to say that he was never loud, didn't take over a restaurant. Did you mean literally like buying a restaurant or taking it over with a podcast studio in the front window?"
Yeah.
From Jason Hoffman, "A 5-minute discussion about the weather in San Francisco, and the weather-loving English teacher can't even get in the Twain gem The coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. I expected more from Michael.
One rule, never interrupt Wilbon.
Yeah, that's probably true. Nicholas Greenwald, my younger brother and fellow little John Greenwald, is soon to be related by marriage to the lovely Amelia Lester on June 24th in New Orleans, Louisiana. John grew up on Woodley Road in Northwest D.C., directly across from the Murray School and five houses down from Luke Russert. John and Luke are the same age and were great boyhood friends, and I can authoritatively confirm that Luke has been confoundingly and irrationally confident since at least the age of five. A few weeks ago, Luke told a story on air about how he and John reconnected after many years thanks to his appearances on your show. However, Luke incorrectly stated that John, a naval officer, was training to be a doctor at Walter Reed. I would like to reassure all of my brother's past, present, and future patients that he is a real doctor. A month after their wedding, Amelia, a proud Australian national and former executive editor at The New Yorker, and John are moving to Japan for a two-year deployment. I know that your blessing would mean a lot to both of them as they begin their journey together. And finally, a plug for Amelia, who left a paying job and is starting a new podcast covering politics named Tell Me It's Going to Be Okay. The first episode is expected to be released this Thursday, and it's signed Edith Russert. From Bob Boxwell, the sign will be changed from Chads to Chatter in about 6 months. The same amount of time you tease the renaming. Karma, baby. From Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. What is next for the Salizas? How about standing in line at the Fort Worth stockyards with cattle for the next 8 hours? That was crazy.
I can't imagine doing that.
How could you do that?
There's no group that I would do that for.
No, there's no person I would do that for. No, to stand in line like that, no. Cameron in Austin. For whatever reason, the ambient noise was very prevalent in the pod yesterday. As a veteran server, I recognized the unmistakable sounds of cutlery and plates and glasses. It sounded suspiciously like the dish pit area of the restaurant. Surely, as the owner of Chatter, you wouldn't be relegated to such a locale. No, I'm not. Then it occurred to me that because of Saliz's presence, it was most likely tuxedoed waiters clearing the fine china and gold flatware away from everyone. I am, though, at a loss to explain the telephone ringing and a small child crying. Did we have that with those part of the audience?
Yeah, I think
that's the audience.
The main phone ringing.
Brandon S. Bowker, singer-songwriter, Lexington, Kentucky. Wait. You got paid to do radio? For the last 2 years of radio, I've been paid 4 free T-shirts and a bi-monthly slice or two of pizza. $40,000 sounds like an absolute dream. Well, you should have been there, as we like to say. You should have been there. What else do we have here? We'll do this one. Jason Hall in Rochester, New York. PTI came on the air when I was in college, and I've been watching ever since, which makes me not quite a millennial little. I can't tell you how thrilled I was last week when the great Jack Vardaman piped up during the show, and he sounded exactly like I expect someone named the great Jack Vardaman to sound like. Thanks for the laughs. By the way, the great Jack Vardaman and the great Sam Reeves are due next week in the PTI studio. Makes me very happy. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
He's freaking genius!
Let the music play. Let me remember the day when you first walked up to my door. We didn't know what was in store. Just let the music play so I can hear Sinatra say, I've got a crush on you. And I knew it was true. So let the music play. Let the feels just as new. And I've still got a crush on you. Let the music play. Let it carry us away. Let the sound of our own tune fly us right up to the moon. Just let the music play.
On the chest, it must be fall again, I guess. We'll take the train away, off to another place. The grass is greener way out west. You say it's for good, but I protest. I thought I knew best. The clouds away, rewrite the names, but the story's still the same. Hey, and you're gone. Lion, tell me it's best for you to go. It's hard to care because I know. When spring comes back around, you walk back into town. Straight to my arms you will go. And tell me that you miss me so. Like every time before. Rise and watch the clouds away. Rewrite the names, but the story's still the same. Hey, and you're gone. The clouds away. Rewrite the names, but the story's still the same.